welcome to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. Today I talk with designer and hand lettering artist Scott Biersack. We talk about being nearly homeless when he was younger, his time studying type design at Cooper Union, dealing with depression and anxiety, the pressure he puts on himself, and more, all right after this. I want to thank our friends over at Jack Prince for sponsoring this episode. I had the opportunity to tour their facility up in Cleveland this past August, and it was incredible. Whatever you need printed, they can do it. Do you need stickers? Jack Prince can do it. Do you need t-shirts? Jack Prince can do it. Embroidered hats, business cards, banners? Jack Prince can do it. They make great stuff at a great price. Speaking of banners, Jack Prince has their lowest price on banners ever right now. Some of them are up to 70% off. I just looked up the cost of an 8-foot by 5-foot banner. How much do you think it should cost? $200? More? You can get it from Jack Prince for just $70. And while we're talking about great offers, let's talk about the fact that Jack Prince is offering free silver ink upgrade right now. But it's not just silver ink. If you're looking to get some hats embroidered, you can get free silver thread. You know, add some bling, add some shine, add some silver. So when you get something printed and embroidered now through the end of the year, add that silver into that design. It's free. Why not take advantage of it? Plus, if you love pocket-sized notebooks, check out Jack Prince Pocket Notes. They come with tons of options, making them the perfect gift, giveaway, branding, custom office supply, whatever you need. These custom pocketbooks are designed for quick sketching, note-taking. And unlike other printers who design, you know, you've got to design around their logo. Let's face it, with a lot of other printers. Jack Prince builds their notebooks completely custom from the ground up, giving you the entire cover to customize in your vivid full color. I just like saying vivid. It's a cool word. Jack Prince makes affordable, great stuff for designers like you and I. They focus on quality and customer service and have been loyal Creative South sponsors for years. Why not pick them next time you need stickers, banners, pocket notebooks, or anything else printed? Plus, Jack Prince is giving you a great discount when you use promo code CSPODCAST16. So if you spend $25, you save $5. Spend $50, save $10. $75, $15. Spend $100, save $25. So on and so forth. You know, when you spend $300, you save $75. That's huge! Just use promo code CSPODCAST16 at checkout. Or visit jack.inc/design. Are you ready to explore your creativity and meet a ton of new friends while you're doing it? Then head over to creativesouth.com right now and get your Creative South tickets. Join us April 6th through 9th in Columbus, Georgia for Creative South, where you come as friends and leave as family. If you like the podcast and want to help support us, head over to patreon.com/creativesouth. Every dollar helps us cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. Plus, when you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, Creative South podcast stickers and t-shirts, and you could even get your own podcast episode. So please, help support the podcast by becoming a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth.
Okay.
All right. Scott, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Or tonight, or whatever it is.
Yeah, 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah. So, you know, we kind of start everything off always with where'd you grow up?
All right. So I grew up in Columbus, Ohio. Mm-hmm. It was definitely like an ideal childhood, I would say, until about 10 years. Well, when I was 10 years old, we ended up moving to Phoenix, Arizona. Mm-hmm. Due to some unfortunate circumstances. Both my parents had lost their jobs. My mom was working for America West at the time, and the hub in Columbus was closing down.
Sure.
So, you know, naturally, it kind of just made sense to move to Arizona because of the large hub that they had out there. Mm-hmm. So, as well as my mom's reasoning for Phoenix is the symbolism for, you know, the bird rising from the ashes. So it's like
rebirth, all that stuff.
The rebirth. Yeah. This is like us starting new as a fresh start in Phoenix. So yeah, it just made sense. So we moved to Phoenix and been there ever since until, you know, just this past year coming to Brooklyn, New York to continue my studies. Gotcha. And yeah.
So I'm sure as a 10-year-old, I swear I've been doing this for a while. As a 10-year-old, you were thrilled with moving and leaving all of your friends.
Oh, man. Let me tell you, I was furious. Like, I was in a huge fit of rage for a number of years, to be honest. Like, I was running away from school, running away from class, because I was so depressed that, you know, we left everything that I knew behind. Mm-hmm. And I just really didn't want to be anywhere but what I considered home at the time.
Sure.
But, you know, you got to do what you got to do. And I feel like over time, I love Arizona now. I love it so much. So much that obviously I'm moving back in a month. I just can't see myself moving back to Ohio because it's like, I don't know. I mean, on some level, hey,
it's not as warm as Arizona.
Exactly. Yeah. I feel like I need my sunny weather all the time, and Ohio just doesn't offer that. So.
Sure. So you get to Arizona, and I know that your family kind of hit a rough spot at that point or shortly after.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Do you mind talking about that a little bit?
Yeah. So, you know, like I mentioned, both my parents, well, my mom had the job at America West, but, my dad lost his job, and it was just a really rough time for our family in general because my dad didn't have a job. He was having a really hard time finding work because he's a little bit older. So he was, you know, a little overqualified. And Sure. Of course, a lot of places don't want to hire an overqualified person because, you know, in the
they
long
cost
term,
more money.
Yeah. And then in the long term, I feel like a lot of these places think that my dad is going to, you know, step up the ladder so quickly that they would eventually like lose the job that they had.
Sure.
So yeah, so it was just a really tough time for a number of years, you know, even a little bit to this day, like not necessarily struggling to that level that we were at, but you know, when we first made the move, we didn't have anything. We moved with just, you know, the clothes on our back and, mm-hmm. you know, some backpacks full of things. And, you know, just didn't have food to put on the table, didn't have a bed to sleep in, barely just, you know, we were barely getting by. We had the house that we were leasing, and sure. My dad would just pick up any job that he could, whether it was like working at Lowe's at 2 a.m. stocking shelves, mm-hmm. or Target, the same scenario, stocking shelves, or even doing a insane like paper route at 3 in the morning as well, just odd jobs that would bring in some sort of income for the family on top of, you know, what my mom was doing at America West.
Sure.
Because just her salary alone just wasn't enough to obviously, because I have 3 brothers as well, so okay. It's like we have a pretty big family to feed, and
yeah, so that's a family of 6, and
yeah, it's a big family, so it was tough to just get by with those things and the, you know, the situation that we were in, and we were all kids at the time. So, you know, once we reached that point of, you know, as soon as I hit 15, I got a job at McDonald's because my parents just needed help, paying for rent, paying for food, paying for whatever, you know, utilities, whatever may come our way. So, you know, my older brother worked at Fry's, grocery store. Just mm-hmm. we were all just trying to you know, bring some sort of income to the family, and you know, continue to live while going to school, while living our lives.
So your family was beyond a paycheck to paycheck situation. It was,
oh yeah, like there was a lot of days where we would only eat ramen because that's all we could afford, just enough to,
and not in the cool college way.
Yeah, not in a cool college way. It was, but luckily we had a lot of support and help from, you know, from neighbors, from a church around the corner. They had a bunch of people bring over lots of like additional canned goods and even furniture that people were getting rid of. So luckily we eventually had beds. We were sleeping on air mattresses for a while.
Sure.
So yeah, I mean, that's the gist of it.
Kind of a
step above homeless at that point. Almost.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, literally a step above homeless. So pretty close to homeless.
So, you know, growing up, how did you deal with that? Because that's a pretty stressful situation to kind of go from what sounds like, you know, in Ohio was a fairly normal middle class upbringing. And,
yeah, definitely.
To definitely not middle class.
I know.
To be put in that situation, how did you deal with that?
I mean, you know, I was so young that at the time I was just angry at my parents when I shouldn't have been. Sure. I was really angry with them because, of course, they took me away from everything that I knew and held dear. And I didn't think about the situation we were in until a number of years later, realizing like, wow, that really sucked. You know, like I didn't come to this realization that we were so dirt poor until a number of years later. And it just hit me, you know?
Right.
But as a kid, like I said, I would run away from school. I'd run away from class. I would just try to take out my frustration by avoiding life, mm-hmm. I guess. Just trying to run away from my problems, when obviously that is like the worst thing that you could do, is running away from your problems is not a good idea. But I guess
I'm 40 and I'm just figuring that out. So.
Well, you know, being a kid, like, I feel like that was the only thing I knew how to do. It was like, I loved running at the same time too. So like I was into running. So running away, it just seemed natural, I guess.
Right.
So I guess that was the only way I could cope with it, was literally running from it.
Gotcha. So, you know, when you're going through school and all that, at what point do you kind of discover that, you know, art is something that you're interested in?
Yeah. You know, ever since I can remember, my older brother and I, even my younger brother, we would all just like sit at the kitchen table and draw stuff, just randomly draw cars, houses, dinosaurs, whatever, you name it. And I would love the illustrations that my brother was drawing, and I would try to copy the stuff that he was putting out. And I actually became left-handed from watching my brother draw, because he's left-handed. So I'm naturally born a right-handed, because I do everything else with the right side of my body.
Okay.
But he was drawing with his left hand for obviously forever now. And sure. Through that process, I tried to copy him with my left hand. And now I write with my left hand. I draw with my left hand. I do everything with my left hand. So it's really strange. But
I have never heard of someone doing it that way. I've heard of the opposite, because my dad's left-handed.
Yeah.
But he does pretty much everything. You know, I mean, he writes left-handed and
right.
all that. And he plays catch right-handed.
Yeah.
Left-handed. But everything else he does right-handed.
Right. I mean, I'm in a similar scenario, but like I was a kid, so I was like 2, 3 up until, you know, he stopped drawing a couple years ago.
Sure.
So just from that time period of me watching him, I didn't know any better. I was so young. I was just picking up a pencil, just going at it.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, I just somehow became left-handed. So
I need to keep an eye on my kids now. They're both left-handed.
Yeah, watch out.
I need to start seeing what stuff they do with their right hand.
Seriously.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess that's how it all started. Like, my brother was really good at drawing, and I loved drawing with him. I loved drawing in general. And I continued that progression of just the art scene into high school. And I took art class from, you know, like, sixth grade up until I graduated. So every mm-hmm. single year up until I was a senior.
Okay.
But then I got into design my junior year. We were offered a graphic design class in our high school.
Sure.
And I think that's when everything changed. Like I saw the comparison between the art world and the design world. And I don't know. Something about design was just so much more intriguing. I have no idea what it is exactly, but design just seemed
you
like
make a better living.
Yeah, that's
or at true. Least a more consistent living.
A consistent living for sure. I don't know. I just fell in love with the design on top of art. So somehow through the course of my junior and senior year of taking that design class in high school, I just came to this realization that I wanted to pursue it in college. So the rest is history.
Sure. So, you know, being a kid who was artistic early on, do you think you use some of that artistic stuff to process and work through and maybe as an escapism when you were growing up?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. You know, once I came to that realization that we were at that, that dirt poor level, that was probably around, you know, in middle school is when I realized like, wow, we were in a really terrible, a terrible spot. And I didn't actually, like bring it out in my art until, you know, probably my early college years. I was just so focused on completing high school and then getting straight into college. And then once college started, I had my head down and, you know, it was full speed ahead, just trying to complete my, course material. And, just through the program that I was in at ASU, it was just super rigorous. It was super time intensive. Like, you know, I feel like most design programs, you're staying up all night long working on your projects. And there was a point where I just like felt like super drained in general, like physically, mentally, emotionally. And that's when I started like inputting myself and my feelings and my emotions and everything that who I am into my artwork, like into the lettering that I was getting into.
So was it up until that point you were using it to avoid everything and then something just kind of clicked and...
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think clicked is the right word.
But yeah, I know what you mean.
So there was a breaking point where it just had to come out and that was the point where it came out.
Yeah, it was just a breaking point for sure. And I just like... Once I hit that breaking point, I was like, oh my God, why haven't I been doing this for years? Because it like... It felt good to like get it out of my system to put it on a wall, put it on paper, put it on a computer, wherever that artwork may live.
So do you think that's where your drive came from? Because I know, you know, so most people, their career kind of starts once they get out of college. You were already doing stuff in college for some fairly prominent brands at that point.
Somehow. Yeah. I don't know how.
Believe me, I would love to know how, because I, you know, I'd like to be doing some of that stuff. Not necessarily lettering, because I'm horrible at it.
That's okay. It takes practice. I was terrible at it, too.
Well, yeah. I will say, and this is not an insulting thing, lettering is just, it's not one of those that, like, I appreciate it. I love looking at it, but it's not.
No, it's totally fine.
It's not my thing.
It's totally fine.
Yeah. But it's one of those, every time I see it, I'm just like, oh, that's so cool. I wish I could do that. But I'm like, I'll let them do that. I'll just like looking at it.
Exactly.
So getting back, you know, is that where that drive came from, do you think? Of trying to push and...
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, it definitely came from a variety of factors. Like, I was obviously trying to voice my emotions. That was one factor. Another factor was I was in a really shitty relationship. Well, you know, we broke up and I, at that point, I felt like I hit rock bottom again. That was another situation where I was just incredibly depressed. And through that depression, I just, you know, kept my head down, focused on my schoolwork, didn't worry about anything else or anyone else around me except myself, which is a terrible thing to do. But at that point in time,
it's what you needed.
Yeah, it's what I needed to do. So it's like, I use that depression to fuel my drive. It sounds kind of strange, but something about that allowed me to focus on what I needed to do as a person and as a designer and as a, an artist, whatever. And I think that's how my drive continued and started at that point. Cause you know, prior to my freshman year of college, I was just living my life. I was just, you know, going to work, coming home, just doing that like daily routine. And then once I like started getting my emotions out, I think that's when like the drive started taking its turn into the design world. And that's how the clients came about. Like, it's all like this cycle, because I was putting out work and then I was sharing on social media, just for myself. And then, you know, I started gaining a following. I started getting emails from people. Hey, I want you to do this for me. And I'm like, well, I guess. Like, it was really strange at first because, of course, I've never done anything for anyone else except myself.
Sure.
So that's how that progression started.
So when you're doing stuff at that point, if you have only really done it for yourself, how are you, you know, valuing your work as far as, you know, when a client comes to you and says, hey, I want you to do this, and it's, you know, say Adobe, and you know,
right,
you're 20 years old at that point.
Yeah.
You know,
I know.
How are you knowing what your worth is monetarily?
Goodness. That's a good question.
Or did you?
I honestly feel like I didn't. You know, I was so young, so into it, that I was just like, oh, cool, I'd love to do some work for Adobe. Like, the project came around. Like, I was just lucky. That was pure luck, that project. I painted some skateboards for myself. I did some chalk mural stuff for myself. And then I saw that project I saw a post on Facebook regarding that project. And they said, like, hashtag your work with Make It Girl and, like, some other hashtag. And so of course I went to my Behance, cause that's where I posted my personal stuff, hashtagged it with the specific hashtags, and then they found it, and the rest is history. Like, if I didn't hashtag my work, I wouldn't have done that project for them. And if I didn't even do the work for myself, I wouldn't have done the project for them.
Sure.
So again, it's like this crazy chain of stuff going on, and I'm not going out seeking this stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, in that sense, I guess I was in a way just hashtagging it. But of course, I had to go through an interview process. I had to go through a crazy process just to be selected.
Sure.
But anyway, getting back to your question, I feel like I had no idea. I was just, you know, head down, just doing my thing. I feel like that's it, and I had no clue what I was doing with my life, with anything else. All I knew is, like, I love drawing. I love drawing letters. I'm just going to keep doing this.
So, you know, I think I read an interview with you where you really didn't kind of focus in on letters until you were a sophomore in college.
Yeah. So, like, sophomore year. Cause at that point I already had, like, my intro to typography class.
Sure.
Like, I called them fonts. You know, I knew nothing about the type world. I knew nothing about lettering. I knew nothing about any of that stuff. But then I came across Zachary Smith's work on Instagram, and, like,
oh, okay,
that's when it hit. Something about his work at the time, just, like, it was like this instant connection of, like, wow, I want to do something like this. And so I just, like, set out on this journey to perfect lettering as a skill set. And, I instantly just thought, okay, how can I do lettering, and how can I continuously get better at it? So I gave myself this project, and I called it Project 365. And now everyone's been doing a Project 365.
Yeah, drawing days sort of thing. Yeah,
yeah, it has definitely exploded ever since I did it, like, 3 years ago. But yeah, the rest is history from that too. I just, like, sat down every single day, drew a piece of lettering, posted it on Instagram. That was only for myself, only to see the progression that I was going to get over time. And, you know, again, gained a following somehow. Clients came. It's all just, like, it's magic. I don't get it.
Yeah. So when you're going through that 365 project, how do you keep yourself motivated? Because, I mean, that's a tough thing for a lot of people. And I'm sure there are days where you just want to go,
oh, yeah,
fuck it.
Oh yeah.
No more. No, I'm done.
I wanted to say that every single day. there was a point towards the end. I was just like, oh my God, I have 100 days left. Can I really do this? I don't know. I don't know what it was, but a huge portion of it was I wanted to hold myself accountable. Like, I told myself, okay, I'm going to draw 365 pieces of lettering, and I need to do it. Like, that's it. Like, I just needed to hold myself accountable. And then putting it on social media also helped too, because gaining that following, people were almost, sure, expecting it. People were like, okay, it's a new day. Where's my new You Bring Fire piece, you know? So it almost, like, gave me incentive to keep putting stuff out, because I didn't want to let those people down too.
So you felt like they were holding you accountable to doing something.
Yeah. Oh, even though they weren't like physically saying, I'm holding you accountable. It was, this mental game. Like, oh, I need to put a piece out there to make sure I don't let myself down and let these people down.
Right. So,
yeah.
So, you know, when you're processing through that, obviously you're kind of gaining a little more confidence in your own skills, or at least I would hope you're getting more confidence in your skills.
Yeah, over time.
Things like that. And you're starting to get noticed by, you know, more corporations and things like that and doing stuff for them.
Right.
You know, how are you balancing all of that stuff? Because you're still a full-time student.
Yeah.
You're doing a 365 project, which, I mean, as a college student, you don't need a whole hell of a lot of sleep, speaking from experience. So that's, you know, but you're motivating yourself to do it.
Right.
Plus you're doing, you know,
I had a full-time job at a place called Zion & Zion, an advertising agency.
Where I was going with that.
I was working there 6 to 1, and then I had class 1 to 5, and then class work, like homework, was from like 5 until 9 p.m. and then somehow squeezing the time to do the Project 365, and then on top of that freelance work. I have no idea. I honestly looking back, I'm like, holy shit, how did I do that? Because I tried to do it again pretty recently when I was working at Stranger and Stranger, and then I was trying to do freelance work, and then I was going to school. And then just trying to like live my life in New York City, this hectic city. So it's like, it's definitely a time management thing. Like I have a planner here. I write down exactly what I have a to-do list in my planner, things that are going on that day. Like I've tried certain to-do apps and like things on my phone, but nothing on the phone works for me. I need like the physical writing. Yeah. Something about it just like makes it click. So yeah, for me, it's definitely time management. Like I had a very set schedule, and I knew exactly what I needed to do at what time. And yeah, that's how I got my stuff done, I guess.
Well, how did you avoid burning out? Because it doesn't sound like you had any time just to shut down and turn your brain off.
No way. It's funny you mentioned that. I actually did. I hit a huge burnout period probably about a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. I was coming out to New York for a Ken Barber workshop. So I was coming out for some more lettering knowledge from the master himself. And at that point, I was going through this weird, I guess you could call it health issues. Like I would have chest pains. I wasn't sleeping very much. I wasn't eating very much. And I'm a skinny guy. So like if I don't eat, I feel incredibly nauseous or dizzy. Like I need a constant fuel. So it was kind of scary, to be honest, because I was feeling like I was going to die, to be honest.
Sure.
It was really scary stuff. So I, you know, went to the doctor. They couldn't figure out what's wrong with me. Obviously,
well, I can tell you what was wrong with you.
Yeah, they keep telling me like, oh, maybe you should sleep more. Yeah, I know that, but. Like it was hard for me to sleep at the time. And, you know, so just that period in time really sucked because I knew I hit that burnout stage.
Sure.
I didn't think it could happen. Of course, like everybody thinks like, oh, I'm never going to burn out. But
so you're exhibiting all of the physical symptoms of depression and anxiety attacks.
Exactly. Yeah. All that stuff. So it was nuts. I didn't know what was going on. You know, my digestion was terrible. I was just like, so now I'm eating gluten free. I'm not eating dairy anymore. It's like from that burnout, it's changed everything about me. So it's kind of crazy, the ripple effect, but, it's only for the better.
Gotcha. Yeah. So that's something you've kind of mentioned that throughout as you've gone through these bouts of depressions, and, you know, two of them were definitely, you can definitely see life in general, a direct correlation between the hardships your family's facing. And then, you know, everybody's had that relationship that just goes south and
gets into that.
But then it sounds like you're pushing yourself so hard that you weren't taking any time to
reflect,
do things for yourself.
Like, exactly.
Just shut down and that kind of spun into it.
Yeah.
So were you feeling... were you able to recognize at some point that you were feeling that? Because, I mean, depression, I think a lot of people get confused by depression and think that means that you're mopey and sad and yeah. all that all the time. And it's not. I mean,
No, it's so much more. It's so much more than that. And of course, at the time, you know, when I was going through the depression, I had no clue. I had no clue. I just thought, oh, you know, I just don't want to be around people right now. Or, oh, sure. I just want to sleep right now. But, you know, two or 3 years afterwards, I was in this class. I vividly remember I was in this class for a very stupid thing. I won't get into that, but I was in this class. And
well, now I want to know.
we're not talking about this.
No, okay.
she said some words. Of course, I can't even remember it right now, but she said some words to me that just clicked. And it made me realize that, oh my gosh, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, I was going through depression. Sure. It was because of, you know, blah, 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 the certain events and stuff that happened to me. And, you know, so 2 or 3 years later, that's when I realized, I was depressed. Like, I had no idea when it was actually taking place. Mm-hmm. So that was strange, but it's also nice to know that, like, there was a reasoning. There was a reason why I was feeling the way I was feeling. And, like, right. Now, you know, to this day, I'm completely different. You know, I'm not the person I was 3 or 4 years ago, of course, because I think now I've slowly come back from that depression, but there's still times in my life where I want to, you know, be away from people. I think I'm more of an introverted person because of that depression. Because I used to be pretty extroverted, especially in high school. I was just like a crazy, like the jokester sort of kid. I would get kicked out of class all the time because I was just, you know, causing a ruckus. And, you know, now I'm more timid. I want to stay by myself in my apartment. Like I try to never leave this place because I just hate going outside.
Is it just the hustle and bustle of New York City?
Yeah, man. This city's crazy. I can't handle it. It's too nuts.
I've been to New York twice, and it's it can be a little overwhelming.
Yeah, man. I don't know. Maybe it's just like who I am as a person, but it's just super stressful. I just can't stand, you know, especially going to like 34th Street, Herald Square, or Times Square, mm-hmm. like the largely populated areas.
Sure.
I can't deal with it at all. I have to have my headphones in at all times so I can like focus on the music, or else I'm just gonna like go insane.
Just like have a panic attack from it, or is it just
not necessarily a full blown panic attack? But I get really like angsty and like just need to like, you know, get back home as soon as possible.
Hey, I know that feeling. I am I'm good in short spurts with people.
Yeah, exactly. Like that, I can handle the city in small amounts, enough to go to class and then come back home.
It's very short amounts. So, well, speaking of going to class, let's kind of talk about that, because
you know,
you get through ASU, and then what made you decide to do the type at Cooper Union program?
I know. Okay, so yeah, so ASU in its entirety was a general design sort of program. Sure. Like it wasn't very
focused. It's not an art school. You just were in the art department.
Right. Right. So, and it wasn't very focused either. So like I feel like some designers focus in advertising or I don't even know what else is offered, to be honest, because my school was just like design and that was it.
That's how mine was too.
So like, yeah, so we got into like exhibition design and, you know, just a wide variety of things that I wasn't interested in, but it's also sure. good to have the knowledge of how those things function. So I told myself I'm never going back to school. I hate school so much. And and then as soon as, you know, a couple weeks after I graduated, or actually it was probably a couple weeks before I graduated, I just, you know, I was still into drawing lettering. I feel like that was like the gateway drug into type design. And, you know, I've known about this Cooper type program for years. Like I've known about a lot of people that have gone through it. Like Jessica Hish went through it. Mm-hmm. And obviously their work is like so much better because of this program, because of the type knowledge that they're getting, for an entire year.
Sure.
And, you know, I told myself, yeah, it'd be cool to go there, but I don't know if I have the money. I don't know if I can do the program. I don't know if I could live in New York City. Like, I had all these like reasons not to go, you know? And then one day I was just like, fuck it, I'm going. Like, why should that hold me back? Why should I possibly regret this in the future? And, you know, coming straight out of school and then going back to school, I was already in that momentum of like doing homework, doing, you know, going to class in general, like having that set schedule. So it just made sense to like continue that cycle that I was already going in. Mm-hmm. And to just continue doing one more year of school. And then if I ended up liking New York City, I'd stay in the city and you know, live here until whenever I decide to move. So I moved everything out here. We have like too much stuff in my apartment, actually, because I assumed that I was actually going to stay here for a longer period of time.
Sure.
But of course, I found out that I really hate it here. It's funny because I visited so many times. I visited for all these Ken Barber workshops, Jessica Hish's workshop, Drown Downer. Like, so that's another way I was like trying to learn about the ins and outs of typography and lettering in general, just taking these workshops. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just from my visits, I love the city. I loved visiting, but
fun place to visit, not so much to live.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So visiting was great, but living here sucks. So yeah. That's how I ended up coming out here. And, you know, I'm just in love with type in general. So I just wanted to continue that knowledge of typography.
Sure. Well, let's talk about that program a little bit, because I know a lot of people probably aren't familiar with it. So kind of do the breakdown of what you do in the program.
Okay. Yeah. So it's broken down into a condensed program and an extended program. Mm-hmm. The condensed program is essentially the entire extended program smashed into 5 weeks. I believe it's 5 weeks.
That just sounds painful.
Yeah. It just sounds like, you know, it sounded pretty similar to ASU, where I was just like constantly going to school, constantly in class, just gonna, you know, I thought I was gonna reach burnout. So I considered, mm-hmm. I actually considered doing the condensed program at first, but then I thought of my burnout stage and I was like, I don't want to go through this burnout again. So on the other hand is the extended program. So you're going to school Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday nights from 6:30 until 9:30. Sure. And that's it. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you go to school, you do your thing. And then the rest of the week, you're free to like do your homework. It's designed in a way so that, full-time designers can like have a full-time job somewhere else. And then they can, you know, leave their job at 6 o'clock and then go straight to school at 6:30.
So it's designed around non-traditional students.
Yes. So then the condensed program, I don't know if I mentioned, it's 5 weeks from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Friday.
Ugh.
So it's just like, that just sounds like overkill to me. So I was like, okay.
12 hours a day, 5
p.m. Yeah, man. That just sounds like torture. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna take it slow. I'm going to do the extended program. Just live a year in New York City. Why not? Let's do it. So Mondays are like a history class. We essentially learn the history of everything related to type. And then Tuesdays are our studio class. So we're like physically drawing. We're like the first term we were using calligraphy as our base for our typeface. And then the second term and now the third term, we're building out our own typeface. So the third term, which is what we're in now. So it's split up into three terms. Third term is we're building off of our typeface from the second term.
Okay.
In two more styles. So like I have a regular and then I'm going to build out an italic and a lightweight.
Sure.
So it's actually a ton of work because you're essentially cramming two typefaces into one term, whereas term one was just one typeface. So it's just double the amount of work, really. So it's crunch time right now and it's getting crazy.
So through that process, you take and build out those typefaces into an entire font system?
Exactly. Yeah. We're going to have an entire font family by the end of the term. And then we're going to print out some specimens on a letterpress printer, too. So it'll be awesome. It'll be pretty cool to have like a physical piece of my type.
So, you know, since you're in your third term now, what does that consist of? I mean, obviously the day to day, you gave the breakdown just there.
Right.
But when working on that specific typeface, not being a type designer, but understanding that a little bit of the mechanics just from the type classes I've taken.
Right, right.
How does that breakdown work on a day-to-day basis within the specific type?
Are you talking about in terms of like my schedule, like doing freelance and other things?
No, as far as like literally working on that typeface and refining it and...
Oh, process like?
Yeah, what's that process look like? Because, I'm trying to imagine it, and I'm like, I think at a certain point, I'd just be like, screw it, it's done.
It's done.
It looks good to me. It works. Yeah, earnings fine. That serif works with that. It ties together. I've got some ligatures. There's some alternate characters. I forgot a comma.
Yeah, exactly. it's kind of hectic, to be honest, because once I first got into it, I had no idea what I was doing, to be honest. Like, I've never designed a typeface. So that's why I wanted to do the program. I wanted to learn how to properly design a typeface from the ground up. And so that process is generally like, so step one, do some research, figure out what this typeface needs to look like, the look and feel, the history behind it. Who the target audience is, where it's going to be used, that sort of thing. Step two would be to actually begin drawing some sketches.
Sure.
Whether that's on paper or digital, it doesn't matter. As long as you like get the overall feel and look of the typeface that you're about to draw. And then, of course, you want to make sure that the typeface isn't something that already exists. Like, some of the characteristics within your typeface could be already drawn in another typeface, of course. So it's
it's kind of hard to come up with a truly original idea.
Yeah, exactly. So there's like little tweaks that you could do to your typeface. Like, maybe you make it extended. Maybe you make it a little bit more condensed. Just little type characteristics like that. Or maybe the serifs are different. Or maybe it's heavier or lighter. Like, there's so many variables with type design. So the possibilities are truly endless. And I feel like that's why typefaces are just constantly being churned out, because there's always a need for a new typeface. So after the history, after you're sketching, then it just becomes like this, a typeface is essentially a system. So sure. You start with an N, you start with an O. Those are your control characters. That allows you to determine the overall spacing between the characters and how other characters almost look based on the skeleton that your N and your O have. And then you build out the rest of the characters. You build out Hamburger Font Sieve, HAMP, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And then you just, after you have that chunk, you build out, you build out your uppercase. Your uppercase is going to start with a capital H and a capital O. Those are your control characters for the capitals, and, continue that process. It's a similar cyclical process, I'd say.
What is the reasoning behind with the lowercase starting with the N and the O, and then the uppercase starting with the H and the O as the control characters?
Characteristics within, so the O itself is a round character, and then the N has your two vertical stems, as well as generally an arch that connects to, another vertical stem. So those... Okay. Those two vertical stems determine like what your other straight characters will look like your B, P, D, Q, other characters that will use that chemical makeup almost of the N.
Okay, that makes sense.
And then the O characteristics will be utilized.
Oh, I got that one. I understood.
Okay. So that'll be
used. Like, that's going to determine every character that has some sort of roundness. You got to base it where it looks like that. But the N was like, why would you do that one? Because that's got.
Yes.
I was literally thinking, well, why wouldn't you pick like a chunkier, blockier letter instead of one that already has an arch in it? You've got the O, which in a way forms an arch too.
Yeah, I mean, so that's the base, and then same thing with the H and the O. The H has all your straights. The O again, same thing. And then once you have your uppercase and lowercase, you move on to numerals. And similar situation, start with your one and your zero, because those are the control characters there.
Sure.
And then build out everything else, and then the rest just comes naturally, I'd say.
lots and lots of training.
Yeah, because like honestly, I'm still like trying to comprehend it myself, drawing accented characters because we never use any accented characters in the English language, really.
Right.
And then like just drawing punctuation in general. Like I don't know what punctuation should properly look like. You have like a general idea, like oh, this should probably be bigger or fatter. But yeah, it's kind of a shot in the dark at first, mm-hmm. and then it's just like. Like this proof here, I don't know if you can see it. You just print stuff out and you constantly are looking at it. Okay, this needs to be changed. Change it in the computer, print it out again. It's just this like back and forth of print, look at it, print, uh-huh. look at it. It's crazy.
So are you going through and using like a program like Glyphs to kind of build everything?
Yeah, there's Glyphs and then there's RoboFont. RoboFont is a little more, it's really... Okay, so I picture RoboFont as like you have a pen tool and you have a like actually that's it. You have a pen tool and mm-hmm. that's it. Glyphs is like Illustrator. You have a pen tool, you got your blend, you got your, you know, everything that you ever want is in Glyphs.
Sure.
Whereas
sure.
RoboFont is a very stripped down version of Glyphs. Mm-hmm. It is literally just like the bare bones, I would say, just enough to like literally draw some vector points and you know, you have your letter form. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I'm still trying to determine which one's better because I honestly don't know. I don't know if there is a right or the wrong answer. But a lot of the true professionals in the industry seem to use RoboFont. And then really? A lot of like the up and coming, like if you're new to type design and you just want to like make a font and, you know, see what your handwriting will look like or something. As a typeface, generally people are going to use Glyphs. Obviously, I would say a huge factor is because of the price point. Like Glyphs is like $200 or something, probably cheaper if you're a student. And then RoboFont is like, I think it's like $450. And that's just for the program itself. Like that doesn't include all the additional things. Like if you want to do kerning, I mean, it can do kerning. But you're probably
going to buy an add-on pack to.
Yeah, you're probably going to want to buy on the metrics machine, which is the kerning application, which is just a little bit better in intuitiveness to it. So it allows you to kern easier, I would say. So, yeah, it's just crazy, man. I feel like Glyphs does the exact same thing.
OK, because I have Glyphs and I open it up every time and I just stare at it and go.
Yeah. Well, if you looked at RoboFont, you'd be doing that times 10. Like,
yeah.
RoboFont's pretty scary once you first open it up. And Glyphs has that more like, oh, this is like a familiar nature to it. You know, you know what Illustrator looks like. So it kind of goes hand in hand in terms of like shortcuts and stuff. Mm-hmm. RoboFont is just complete opposite. Like, you have to learn everything. It's just, it's crazy.
Gotcha. Yeah, it sounds crazy. So, you know, you're barreling down on the end. You got a month left.
Yes.
Eric's kicking you out at the end of July. he's probably already found another replacement for you and is rubbing it in your face.
Yes, yes.
So what are you planning on doing from there?
Yeah, I mean, so we already mentioned it on Diane's show, but my buddy Winston and I are – starting our own type foundry.
Oh, nice.
So we'll have a like an online place to sell our typefaces. So Winston is going through the Type of Cooper West program. So the same program, but in San Francisco.
Mm.
So he'll be developing his own typefaces there. And then we will just, just keep doing that until we're like sick of it or something. I don't know.
Now, is he planning on moving back to Baton Rouge?
I don't think so. No. I don't think he likes it enough to go back there. I don't know where he's going to go. I think he might end up going to Portland or Austin, but okay. You know, some city like that, I'm sure.
Gotcha.
So yeah, that's the plan so far. And then that's it. We can't see too far into the future. We'll just like let life happen and hopefully everything works out.
Gotcha. Well, I wanted to ask you, since you do live with Eric, how is it living with another designer?
I mean, it's like people ask me that all the time, and it's like it's kind of nice because like today, you know, I had a pricing question. I'm working on a project for Nature Valley, and I always have a hard time with pricing.
Like, you're not going to work it out in trade and get just lifetime worth of granola?
No, no way. I mean, they're good, but not that good.
My kids would argue.
Yeah, so it's always difficult for, like, pricing stuff. Like, I've been doing it for a couple years now, and I still have a hard time with it. And living with a designer is kind of nice because we can always, like, bounce questions off each other. So, like, I was talking to you about pricing. We're going to work on a project together, a mural, in a week. Mm. So it's kind of nice to just, like, be able to collaborate, be able to, like, he's literally in the room next door, so I can talk to him about design related things or just life in general.
Sure.
It's really nice. There's no terrible thing that has come from it. So.
Well, that's good. Glad to see that you're not making headlines for killing each other or anything like that.
No, not even close.
So the extension of that and where I was kind of originally going is, I know you guys are both in the same accountability group.
Right.
How has that, being in that accountability group, kind of helped further what you want to do?
Yeah. So I was invited to that group, you know, towards the beginning of the year, I would say probably around January. So I knew Eric was already gathering with some of these people at first, and he invited me, and I was honestly kind of skeptical. I was like, you know, what good could come from this? Like, is it truly worth my time to talk to these guys on Slack? And, you know, after being invited and after seeing these interactions, it's just a great place to communicate with them, collaborate with these people, shoot ideas off of them, get feedback, just like a great environment for designers to be open and honest, just to continue like our friendships from Creative South too, because we see these guys, you know, once a year. So being able to talk to them 24/7 is also really nice. It helps like maintain our friendship. It's not only about design. It's also about just like, we're goofing off in there all the time. We're talking about stupid stuff. We're sharing stupid stuff. It's like, it's been nothing but great things. So I'm very lucky to be a part of that group and to have those guys, like, you know, have my back when it comes time to, like, if I need to get in a fight, they'll be like, okay, let's do this. And they'll,
well, hopefully you don't need to get in a fight.
I know. But they're the type of people that be like, all right, let's go. So
I mean, you are a bunch of artists. So
so it's been good, man.
Let's face it. Some stereotypes can be true.
Oh, of course.
Speaking from experience. So, yeah, well, I'm glad that that's kind of helped you out, and, you know, you've been able to expand on those friendships and,
yeah, it's been great.
Keep in touch. So, you know, kind of moving forward, what are you hoping to do? Not, you know, aside from just starting the font foundry,
right?
Gets tongue tied real quick on that one. with Winston, what, you know, was there a specific reason other than not a huge fan of New York City for moving back to Phoenix?
No, I mean
obviously, like, there's family and stuff like that too.
Yeah, the obvious things, family for sure. Like both my parents, you know, my brothers, everybody's there. I love the sunny weather. I'm more of like a West Coast guy. Everything's a lot more chill there. Even though it is pretty hot. Right now, especially like a couple weeks ago, it was 120, which is crazy. Definitely I need my sunny days every day. Cause sometimes, like, especially here when the winter hit, I just like, I feel like I hit depression again, but not, obviously
seasonal
not
seasonal affective disorder.
Yeah. Not as bad, obviously, but I just couldn't stand the snow. I can't stand the rain. Like, Arizona is the place where it barely rains. So it's a great place to be, just to be outside. You know, I just love being outside. I love having like an open, clear head too, because it's impossible to have one here. And also the Phoenix design community is just unlike any other design community I've ever interacted with.
So there's a strong design community there?
Yeah, huge design community there. Before I left, I designed the logo type for the Phoenix Design Week conference, the Method and Madness conference that they put on every year. I'm super excited to come back, and I'm going to be designing a poster this year to try and like get more involved with the design community again, because I've been gone for so long. So I'm trying to like, you know, get my roots in there, and I just like miss all my buds that I haven't hung out with for so long. It's going to be good to like catch up with everybody and see. It's like, it's almost like family, you know, like similar to Creative South, just seeing everybody for an entire year or once every year is what I meant to say. And then not seeing them again, it's like I'm having withdrawals right now.
Sure.
So I need to get back there. So I'm just super excited to just like continue freelancing, just trying to live life. I have no set goal other than just continue doing what I'm doing, I guess.
Not working at McDonald's again.
That was the torture.
You will do work for McDonald's if they need
right.
specific things.
That's right.
Not working at McDonald's.
Yes, yes.
Well, very cool. Well, wrapping up real quick, where can people find you online to see more of your stuff and learn a little more about you?
For sure. They can go to scottbiersack.com. It's BIERSACK.com. Or on social media, at You Bring Fire. All spelled out, You Bring Fire. And yeah.
So where did You Bring Fire come from?
Oh, man. That's a story in itself. Long story short, there's a band called Ivory Line. They have a song, literally, I believe the song is called You Bring Fire.
Okay.
The song itself. But anyway, you know, the song came about when I first listened to it, I don't know, maybe 6, 7, 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. I was a kid. And it definitely, like, you know, during that, it was like during my depression years. And sure. Something about that song really spoke to me at the time. It really fit with, like, where I was going with my life and the things that were taking place. So I, you know, before I even got on Instagram, I was on Tumblr. Mm-hmm. And that was my username on Tumblr. So I've just carried it across everything else now. It's just become a part of who I am.
Cool. Very cool. Yeah. Well, we wrap every show up by saying go out and hug some necks. So would you mind taking us out?
Hell yeah. What, I'm saying that line?
Yeah, you're saying it.
Go out and hug some necks.
Awesome. Scott, thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
Oh, of course. Thank you for having me. This has been great.
Very cool. We'll talk to you later.
Find out more about Scott on Twitter and Dribbble at YouBringFire. And be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with him. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and our new Facebook page at CreativeSOPod. And follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CreativeSouthGA or over at CreativeSouth.com. And I'm at Jay Frostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. Thanks again to our friends and sponsors, Jack Prince. Head over to JackPrince.com and use promo code CSPodcast16 to get an incredible discount. Or visit them at jack.inc/design.
For a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code CreativeSouth. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. Don't forget to head over to CreativeSouthGA.com right now to pick up your tickets for Creative South in April of 2017. We're looking forward to seeing you there and hugging some necks. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at patreon.com/creativesouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.